Hey everyone, welcome back to Citywide Blackout, your home for music, movies, and more. I'm your host, Max Bowen. In this episode, I'm chatting with violinist Mia Asano as she talks about what it was like to perform with the legendary Lindsey Stirling, going on tour after graduating high school, and how the Denver fashion scene influenced her career. Big shout out to Melissa from the band Nordic Daughter for her help in arranging this interview. My next guest, Mia Asano. I could list off her resume, but we only have a certain amount of time, so I will direct you guys to her site, miaasano.com. You can check everything out there, but let me give you a few of the high points. So, classically trained violinist from the age of 5, has performed with the likes of Lindsey Stirling, Jack Russell's Great White. She currently plays with the band's Nordic Daughter, whom I love, and Larissa Vienna and The Strange. Mia, it is so cool to have you here. Thank you for joining me.
Thanks for having me. Nope. I'm very, very grateful we could make this work.
No problem. Hey, me too. And before we get into the meat of the interview, I want to share a few things with folks. Of course, I know everyone is extremely just anxious right now and upset and sad and scared. There, of course, is the staple, this will pass. It will. But you can't change what is going on in the world. Mm-hmm. You can't change what is happening in the news. You can't change what may happen. You got to focus on yourself. Are you taking care of yourself? Are you eating well? Do you have your plans in place? Is everything going okay for you? That's what you got to focus on. The rest, that's totally outside of your control, and it is pointless to focus on it and bury yourself in it. It doesn't get you anywhere. That's my words of wisdom for the day. Hope you guys are all doing okay, taking care of yourselves, and we'll take your mind off of this. We're going to talk about music. We're going to talk about people. We're going to talk about shows. So, Mia, I do want to ask, like I said earlier, you've been classically trained since the age of 5. Mm-hmm. When I was 5, I don't think I was classically trained to anything. what got you into doing this? Like, what happened that at 5 years old you said, I want to learn the violin?
Well, honestly, it was driven by my parents, because when you're that young, you don't really decide you want to play an instrument. I didn't even know what music really was. So my family just sat me down and was like, you can play violin, piano, or guitar. And I chose to play violin. And I make the joke that they start you really young on violin, because it takes you about 10 years to stop sounding just terrible. And then you can start applying for music schools. So I've been playing about 16 years now. And around the age of 14 or 15, I started playing electric violin. And that's what I consider my primary instrument now.
And I have seen some electric violin artists. Of course, I mentioned Lindsey Stirling earlier, probably one of the best known for that.
Yeah.
May O'Hara, another one well known for that as well. What changed when you went to the electric violin? Does that give you a new range of sounds and styles as opposed to just using like a regular violin?
Yeah, it's definitely a regular acoustic violin, how you would normally picture a violin. That, of course, is my number one love, because that's what I started on. And I think the sound is beautiful. You can't achieve a tone like that in any other way, really. But what the electric violin allows me to do is a lot of things. One is I can run it through the same effects as an electric guitar. So I can do distortion, wah, chorus, delay, all these different crazy effects. And it just sounds really, really cool. The other thing is I play a couple different types of electric violin. One of them is a 5-string electric liquid violin made by Brandon McDougall, who designs the ships for Star Trek and builds electric violins. He's the coolest guy.
I want to meet this guy now, if this is what he does.
He's so cool. I got to go out to his shop in Ojai, California, and he's just the coolest. So I play one of those violins, and it has a C string. That's the 5th string. So it's essentially, if you took a violin and a viola and like mushed them together into one instrument, that's my violin. So I have all the range. It's an extended range instrument. The other violin that I play is a Viper. They're made by Mark Wood of Wood Violins. And it's a 7-string Viper, and it straps on. So you're not restricted by holding it under your chin anymore. It kind of straps on and props itself up. Currently I'm playing on one that's on loan from a friend, but they're building me a custom one that I will get at the end of the summer, and it's going to be 7-string and it'll have frets, and it's the coolest thing ever. So I'm really, really excited. And yeah.
Oh my God. This sounds like it's going to sound just like amazing. Like you're not going to so much hear it as feel it.
Yeah, exactly. It's really cool because it since it's extended range, it has 7 strings. So that's even more strings than a normal violin has 4 strings. So this one can go even lower than a cello because it has a low B flat string.
Mm-hmm.
So I can play all the cello parts too, and the viola parts, and the violin parts, and it's really cool.
So a seven string violin, are those like commonly used? It kind of sounds like it might be sort of a unique instrument.
I think it's relatively unique. There's a lot of electric violinists who play on 7 strings, but there's very few electric violin makers who will make a 7 string just because it's kind of complicated. It's also not that many people want one because the neck is significantly bigger. It's a whole nother animal. It's very different from a normal violin. So I think the transition's pretty tough. And it's definitely been a challenge for me to switch from a 4 or 5 string to a 7 string. But I think the benefits definitely outweigh the issues because it's such a cool sound. It's so, I think it's unique. And within the community, there's a lot of just incredible 7-string players, like ridiculous. And 6-string. 6-string violins are pretty common. More common. 5-string, 4 and 5-string are definitely the most common.
Okay. Can you give an example of some of the different sounds you can do with a 7-string that you could not do with a 4 or 5?
Yeah, like I said before, definitely you're hitting that low end, so you're able to play cello and bass lines. It's really helpful if you're doing any sort of live looping of yourself, because then you don't have to use an octave pedal. You can just, you know, you have all the notes at your disposal. And you also get that the mid range too with the C string and the F string. So you know you can play metal if you add distortion to it. You can play like these really cool guitar lines. It also allows you to play like I'll try to transcribe a lot of guitar solos, and often on the 4-string violin I can't hit all those low notes that they're hitting. You know, so with the 7-string it takes care of that issue. I don't have to transcribe it an octave up or something.
Okay.
So it's very helpful.
Wow. So you've been playing for about 14 years, as you mentioned. Sorry, 16. But who's counting, right?
Yeah, right.
Are you considered to be like a master at this instrument, or are you still like learning and like taking lessons?
I still take lessons. I'm in college still, so I have a private studio teacher who I meet with every week. I'm very lucky. I go to the Berklee College of Music, so there's this incredible string faculty there who I get to work with whoever I want, and it's been amazing and life changing. I definitely don't consider myself a master. I have so much that I want to learn still. But playing since the age of 5 definitely gave me a foundation. So I feel like technique wise, I was exposed to a lot just from studying from a young age, and now I'm kind of trying to refine and learn just as many styles as I can and continue to get better.
Aside from your schoolwork, is music like a full-time thing for you? Does this take up the rest of your day?
Yeah. I basically, up until this whole corona business, I was playing about 7 or 8 hours a day in classes alone. I was in 11 bands. I had a bunch of recording projects going on. I was planning a tour. I have my own band, the Mia Asano Band, and then a Celtic group that I started. I was playing in a few friends' bands. I teach lessons. That's how I make the majority of my income, is from lessons and gigging. So I was just, you know, trying to take control of my life again, because I spent the last semester in Spain, actually, because Berklee has a campus out there. So I was out there. I couldn't really work, and I was just kind of traveling a lot and studying jazz. And then I came back here, and I was like, you know what? I want to play as much as possible. Mm-hmm. So music became my everything. It was my full time, you know, from morning till night. That was all I was doing. And it still is to some extent. It's definitely different now because I can't just go from rehearsal to rehearsal. And a lot of my classes are ensembles. And so now that school has moved online, it's become very, very tricky to kind of figure out how do you rehearse a string quartet when, you know, you're all remote. And the answer is you can't really. So things have shifted, things have changed. We're relying a lot more on technology, but I'm still doing just as much music. And I recently got a mandolin that I've been learning in my spare time, of which I have a lot now. So it's been very productive and musical so far.
There you go. Yeah, I think that's one of the big things that has shifted, that people are definitely trying to find ways to kind of fill their time, because in some cases, you know, they're not working right now, or they're not doing what they normally do in their given day. And I think it's been a challenge for some, because like, what do I do to fill the hours?
Exactly. And I know it definitely hit the entertainment industry really hard. I mean, it's hit everyone really hard, of course. And I feel very lucky that since I am a student, I'm not relying on a full-time job at the moment to, you know, so I haven't been impacted as much as I know a lot of people have. But yes, it brings up the issue of, okay, well, all my gigs are now canceled. A lot of the ways I was making money are canceled. I have to, in order to teach lessons, I have to, you know, go on public transportation, and I would prefer not to do that now. So how are we moving things online? How are we, am I still going to tour this summer? It's a lot of things like that. And a lot of my friends who, you know, tour full time are kind of wondering what to do now, and are in a really tough position because, you know, all of their work is gone now. So
yeah,
it's like, what do we even do? So it's tricky.
It definitely is. It definitely is. Mm-hmm. All right. Well, I want to shift the conversation a bit, something a little less depressing.
Yeah, that'd be great.
Yeah, right. Yeah, because we're all kind of thinking like, oh, geez, that just really brought the whole like tenor down of the whole conversation.
Yeah, yeah.
I know that like a lot of my musician friends too have had things. They've been hit hard because they've had gigs canceled and they're out of work for the next like month or two or what have you. I honestly foresee that once shows pick up again, you're going to see pretty sizable crowds at them. I think people are missing that. They're missing the experience of being at a show and going places and doing things. So I expect once the bars open up and the restaurants open up and the shows resume, you can expect some pretty big houses. And that's my sincere hope, that we don't just ignore this stuff, that we support the businesses, support the artists who need it, because they need it right now. They could definitely use it.
Absolutely. And a lot of artists are doing live streams right now too, and having people Venmo them and doing like remote concerts, which is really creative. And that's, people are finding very creative solutions. And I think the outcome of this will hopefully be a positive one. And now we have so much more time to practice, so the concerts will just be even better.
Yeah, there you go. There you go. There you go. Yeah. I want to talk about some of the artists that you've performed with over the years. Of course, Lindsey Stirling, top of my list to talk about, because I'm a huge fan. How did you get connected with her?
So I went to a performing arts high school, and from the sixth grade through my senior year of high school. So I was there for 7 years, and I'm from Denver, Colorado. So it was the Denver School of the Arts, and I went there and just got a lot of opportunities through them. And the Lindsey Stirling event was one of them, because she was touring through for her Warmer in the Winter tour. She needed some student performers to back her up in an orchestra. And so our orchestra director, you know, got an email, and so I volunteered, of course, because she was a huge inspiration to me when I was like in middle school, and was first discovering that violin wasn't just classical. So, you know, we got the call. I was like, yes. And we went and performed, and it was the biggest show I've ever played. I think it was for like 7,500 people at the First Bank Center in Colorado. And it was amazing. And it was all because of my high school. And I got a lot of opportunities through them, just for a lot of things. We performed in New York. I got to solo at Alice Tully Hall in New York. And we got to go to Austria and tour Europe a little bit. And we got to play in Atlanta, and I got to go to New Mexico and Dallas, and all these amazing, amazing orchestral performances, opportunities that I got to do through the Denver School of the Arts.
Shout out Denver School of the Arts.
Yeah, DSA. Miss you guys.
What was it like meeting Lindsey? Like, was she just a really like chill person?
She's so nice. It was incredible. She's the nicest person. She's adorable. She's so small, like, and I'm barely 5'3", and I think she's like 5 foot. And I had so much support from a lot of my friends too, like some of my designer friends and some of my event planner friends. They like made clothes for me. They filmed like promo videos for me because they were so excited that I was playing for her. I think a lot of people thought I was opening for her, when in reality I was just backing her up. So we go to the show, and I'm just, you know, it's exactly what I want to do for the rest of my life, is basically that, with different music, not quite, like, the dancing is not, I cannot dance, but those types of performances, that type of creativity, the videos, the original music, all of that is exactly what I've always wanted to do since I was 13 years old. So I'm there, and I'm so excited, and I'm like, I'm trying to get to know everyone and meet everyone, and I get to meet her, and oh, and Mark Ballas was there too from Dancing with the Stars, who I've been a fan of his since I was really little, so I got to meet him. He was so nice, and she gave us some really good advice. She said authenticity is the most important thing. She said I seemed very authentic, and I was just, you know, so happy. And she said to find a social media platform that you can grow on, and hers was YouTube. And she said find the next big thing and make it your own, and really see how you can expand on there. And it's advice that I have continued to take to heart since then. And also, I got to meet her saxophone and flute player, Justin Klunk, who's one of my, we met at this show, and now he's one of my best friends. And so I'm very, very grateful for that whole like experience, because I've got to meet him, I got to meet her. It was just such a fun time. And I got to perform, and it was one of the best shows I've ever gotten to do. So it was amazing.
Nice. I would probably fall apart if I get to meet Lindsey Stirling in person. I would freak out. Do you have a favorite album of hers?
I like her first one. The first one is the one that really inspired me to kind of, it opened my eyes to the world of like alternative violin playing. And I think a lot of the songs on there are really, really good, especially because she was kind of doing it all on her own. She, you know, I think she released it when she was 26. She was out of college. She didn't go to music school. I think she studied film. So she's kind of doing all of this by herself, meeting up with producers, you know, bringing them her original music, getting them to create a track for her all individually. And then she compiles this album. And I think some of the songs on there, I think they're brilliant. I play some of her songs at every gig. Like I always, cause they're crowd pleasers, you know? So definitely the first album. The rest of her albums I think are good too, but the first one, there's something magical about it. But I think that's just cause I'm nostalgic, and it was very impactful to me at a young age. I like that one a lot.
Now was this your first performance with Lindsey? Your first like a time performing in front of a crowd?
Oh no, I've been performing for like years before this. I started playing live when I was 14 or 15 years old. I started playing at fashion shows in Denver, and so it was like a crazy story of how I got this violin teacher at the time. There was this futuristic fashion show, and she got asked to play violin at it because they wanted some Lindsey Stirling songs played, actually. And she didn't really want to do it, so she asked me to do it, and because she knew I had an electric violin. I play the show, and I didn't realize this, but it was a huge, huge deal. It was like 600 people in the audience, like all of the biggest magazines and newspapers of Denver. This was in Colorado. They were all there, all these designers. And so I go and I like open the show and I play at intermission, and you know, there's photographers, they're projecting my face on this huge screen. I have aerial dancers dancing behind me, and I'm like 15 years old. Like, what is happening? And from there, this designer, Salwa Owens, kind of met me and asked me to start playing at her shows. From her shows, other designers started asking me to play at their shows. And it kind of spiraled into me becoming like the fashion show violinist of Denver. And that's how I got into modeling too. And that's what I did because that was my freshman year of high school. So for my whole high school career, I was also playing in all these shows. And then they would lead to other things through that. I got into the music scene. I got into modeling. I got into, you know, making YouTube videos, like doing all these things. But it really stemmed from the fashion scene of Denver.
Wow. Was it like nerve-wracking for you being 15 up on stage, especially with all this other stuff kind of like going on like around you?
Yeah, I've always loved performing. Like at the time I was doing a lot of theater too and things like that. And so I don't mind being on stage. It's where I actually feel the most comfortable and happy if I'm prepared. But it was surprising to me how many people were there, and you know, so I was there like, what's happening? This is crazy. I had no idea what I was in for. And then after it was over, I started shaking. So I was like, okay, that's now the adrenaline's coming. Now the nerves are here. But when I'm on stage, I feel great. I feel very, very happy and comfortable.
Nordic Daughter. We mentioned them earlier in the show. They've been on the show before. I'm a huge fan of their music. How did that happen? How'd you meet up with them?
So it was through the fashion scene, which is why
the fashion scene is just like your whole career, huh?
It really was and is. I owe a lot to them, the Denver fashion community. They're amazing people and are very supportive. But yeah, through them, through this woman, Raven Legion, she was she's a close friend of Melissa, who's the lead singer and manager for Nordic Daughter. And so Nordic Daughter was posting about needing a violinist, and Raven connected us. I went and had a couple rehearsals with Nordic Daughter, and then got to join them. Unfortunately, now that I live in Boston, I don't really play with them anymore. I'll do the occasional show if we link up. But yeah, they've found some other violinists who are doing them proud, doing me proud. But it was an amazing year of my life. It was crazy. We went on tour. They played at my senior recital, and helped me to create this crazy senior recital, where I was headlining, but then I was also in both of the opening bands, which were Nordic Daughter and a bluegrass band of mine. And, you know, we became just very, very close. We played gigs all over Colorado, all over the West Coast. We recorded an album and an EP. And yeah, it was such a fun time. We dressed up as Vikings, and, you know, I'd do the war paint. We did a music video with a wolf, and just so many. It was, you know, I have all these insane stories now, and my friends are like, who are you? But it's so fun to be able to tell people I toured with a Viking rock band.
Oh God. Yeah. That I would love to tour with a Viking rock band. Even if I was just like doing their like merch table or something, be like, I don't care. I'll be your gopher. I'll be your gear hauler. I'll drive the van, whatever you guys want. I just want to say I get to tour one summer with a Viking rock band.
Yeah, and I get to say, I right out of high school too. I graduated high school and then went on tour, which is so fun.
Most kids like graduate high school and they go to work at Sears or something like that, or they just take like the summer just kind of chill and get ready for college. You're touring with a rock band. No big deal. Yeah,
no big deal. Not a big deal. It was so cool. It was the craziest like 3 weeks of my life. Mm-hmm. And so fun. Like, I have the craziest stories. And it was just such a fun time. I miss them.
Best tour story. I want to hear it.
Oh my gosh. Okay. Oh my gosh. There's so many. So a bunch of like insane occurrences happened before we ended up going on tour. So what ended up happening is, instead of being a trailer, we were unable to, and we had to minute book a bunch of campsites, and we didn't really have a lot of places to stay. So this one night we're playing this show, because Melissa, the lead singer, had some relatives in San Diego, and so we go to like, it's kind of in the outskirts of San Diego, in this like trailer turned into a house and kind of on farmland. And we go, and I have no idea what we're in for. And I guess it's Melissa's, I'm not exactly sure how they're related, but I think cousin or like somehow related. So we're playing at this girl's house, and it turns out it's a house show, and she's in a punk band. So she invites all the punk bands and like punks of San Diego to this house show. And so, and I'm there like watching the three opening bands thinking like, they're great, but Nordic Daughter really is not the same vibe as all these like hardcore punk bands. And there's all these people walking around with like mohawks and like crazy leather jackets and stuff. And I was really nervous because I was talking to the drummer. I'm like, oh, I don't know. Like, I really hope they like us. And so we go on and we nail it. It was one of our best shows of the tour. And I just ended up having the best time. And our drummer still tells this story because he thinks it was so funny how I was so nervous and then like went on stage. And they all liked me, and everyone was like, yeah, violinist. And then they ended up, as for our merch, we were selling Viking drinking horns because why not? And so that was the show where we sold the most drinking horns. But after it's over, like, where we ended up staying the night was in like this abandoned motorhome in the backyard, because the girl whose house it was, her mom just comes up to me. She's like, hey, you want to stay in my motorhome? And I was like, okay. So she takes us out to the woods and like opens this door, and she hasn't used it in 2 years. And it's this crazy, like, motorhome turned hair salon, that because she was a hairstylist but then hasn't used it in 2 years. So there's like flies, there's like, you know, some really gross things, and she's like cleaning it up. I'm holding my flashlight of my phone up outside this motorhome so the flies will fly out. There's like Texas bling, like decoration everywhere, like crosses, pictures of Marilyn Monroe, perfume bottles, like all this crazy stuff. It was beautifully decorated, even, but it hadn't been used. So we're like cleaning it up, and then I ended up sleeping in it. It was the craziest place I've ever slept. It ended up being sanitary at the end, but it took a little bit of time.
Well, that's good. That's good. That it was sanitary at the end.
Oh yeah. I'm very appreciative of them for letting us stay there.
Yeah.
They didn't have to do that, and it meant I didn't have to stay in a tent that night. So very grateful to those guys.
Are there artists out there that you have not played with that you would love to play with?
Oh my gosh. That's such a hard question. There's so many artists I'd love to play with. There's a lot of violinists who are just killing it right now who I really would love to collaborate with, just to name a bunch of them. My really good friend Katie Jacoby, who's on tour right now with The Who. She's like my musical big sister, so definitely you should check out her music. She just released an EP. I would love to collab with her. My old violin teacher, who he owns the or works at the Electric Violin Shop, his name is Matt Bell, who also released an EP recently. I'd love to collab with him. Just idols of mine, Tracy Silverman, Joe Denenzen, Chuck Bontrager, Mark Wood, Alex DePue, just some, I'm listing so many violinists right now that you should check out. Caitlin DeVille, who has been probably my biggest inspiration throughout my entire life. So those are a bunch of, I mean, there's a billion more who I could list right now, but those are like top of the list of violinists at least. And then I do a lot of rock and pop music. So honestly, any pop artists that need a string section and rock, like I said, my friend's on tour with The Who right now, like any band that needs violin, I would love to play with. And then, yeah. And other than that, I'm playing with some incredible friends of mine right now, at Berklee, who just amazing, amazing musicians. I'm so lucky I get to, collaborate with them and be in their bands. So, you know, my very good friend Kelsey Blackstone, I'm in her band. My very good friend Ben Hartman, who goes by Buglebot, he does a lot of electronic music. And my friend Laura Clow, who's in this band called Vermont Cheddar. And all of us are trying to tour together because we essentially have the same members in each band. And so I get to play music with all of those guys. And then, of course, my own bands, the Mia Asano band, and then like my Celtic project. So those bands are definitely... you'll be hearing from all of them soon. You know, we're kind of incubating right now, rehearsing a bunch, and we're about to explode into the Boston music scene, I hope.
Mm.
Thanks for letting me do all these plugs for my friends.
Oh, of course. Of course. Of course. Yeah. I've seen like a lot of bands over the years that'll add things like, a violinist or a cellist, and it just changes the whole dynamic like of the band. Before they're like a rock band or a folk band, and now it's just a total... It's not just a matter of adding another instrument. It's adding a new, like, mix to the sounds, you know? Mm-hmm. It changes everything, I find.
I definitely agree. I think every band could use some violin, but I'm biased. But what a lot of people don't realize is the violin, especially the electric violin, offers so much diversity. So, like, in Nordic Daughter, I was essentially acting as another guitar player. And so you have all the capabilities that a guitar has. It just sounds a little different. It takes a little bit of adapting, but then you also have more capabilities because you have the bow. So your sound, it's sustained. You can do like all these crazy effects and you can have an acoustic like string sound if you want. So it provides a lot, I think.
Well, Mia, thank you for talking to me. I appreciate this. This has been so much fun. It's been good to kind of detach from all the crazy out there for a while. And folks, if you want to learn more about Mia, you go to miaasano.com. Check out the 6 trillion bands she's got going on. I won't name the whole thing. It's a long list. It's all there on the site. And definitely look forward to more shows down the road. I personally hope I get to catch one of them because I have heard your sound with Nordic Daughter. And actually, that was the thing about the band I think that I noticed the most was when like the violin hit. I was like, whoa, this is so cool.
Oh, thank you.
And I think I mentioned that to Melissa during our interview, and she's oh yeah, that's Mia, and she rattled off everything you're doing. I'm like, oh crap, that's impressive.
I love Melissa. She's amazing. She's actually my representing me as my agent now. She has an amazing booking agency. Yeah, I love her. I miss them, and I'm very grateful that she connected us with this. Like, this has been so cool. Thank you so much for having me on this show.
No problem. No problem.
Hey guys, what's going on? This is Brian Murphy from One Time Mountain, and you're listening to Citywide Blackout with Max Bowen.
Rock on.
All
All right, folks, that brings the show to a close. Big thanks to Mia for joining me, and you, the listener, for tuning in each and every episode. Follow the show on Facebook under Citywide Blackout, Twitter, Instagram, Citywide Max, and check out citywideblackout.blogspot.com. Keep those ears open.